It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's already October 10th and 11th, depending on when you're listening to this. If you're listening to this on Saturday, October 10th, it is at 9:05 after the 9 o'clock news. And if you're listening to this on Sunday, October 11th, it is at 7:05 after the 7 o'clock news. Big shout out to my guest last week, Dr. and Professor Annabelle Burrell, Leadership in Times of Crisis. She's written a few books, one on leadership and then also a book on mindfulness that I co-authored. And basically what Annabelle was saying is the leadership traits during the time of crisis, the importance of communication and being authentic. And so all the sort of regular leadership traits that leaders need are almost like amplified in the time of a pandemic. So speaking of pandemic, with me this weekend is Dr. Joe Arante, one of our great vice presidents at Northeast Delta Dental, and prior to that was CEO of our Previsor subsidiary. And Previsor is a software that powers our really renowned Health Rural Wellness, or HOW, program, which, based on your score after your hygienist or dentist puts in some numbers and does some measurements and some questions, you may be entitled to some enhanced benefits, such as a third or fourth cleaning. So we want to talk about dentistry as part of essential health care. And just to kind of level set the audience, we all know that back on March 16th, the ADA recommended, the American Dental Association recommended, that only emergency and urgent procedures should be done. In New Hampshire, that was taken off on about May 11th, and in Maine on May 18th, and in Vermont the Tuesday after Memorial Day or June 1st, depending on the procedure. So basically, we're back in terms of Northeast Delta Dental. July and August, our claims exceeded or equaled July and August of 2019. So, Dr. Joe, with your long history and for everybody's benefit, we've introduced Joe before, but not only is Joe a great VP here at Northeast Delta Dental, he's run his own companies. He's been a practicing dentist, ran a significant dental operation in the Boston area, so well experienced, and we're lucky to have him because he has grandchildren in Concord. So tell us why, Joe, you think that, one, the claims have returned so robustly. Do you think that people, the body politic, understands that oral health is an integral part of overall health, or do we have a ways to go on that?
Well, I think most people understand that, but there are still some that believe that it's a cosmetic procedure. It's to get your teeth, you know, brighter and shinier and cleaned up, like a new hairdo might be, or a facial. And it's really quite a bit more than that, because it's essential to maintaining good overall health. Your oral health and the two diseases that we treat in dentistry, which are tooth decay and gum disease, are both chronic conditions that have a good deal of inflammation and infection associated with them. They're bacterial infections, and they have a significant impact on diabetes, coronary artery disease, and a whole host of other chronic conditions that we deal with as a populace. And so it was a couple of decades ago, but it was kind of earth-shattering at the time. The U.S. Surgeon General proclaimed that you don't have health, you don't have good health if you don't have good oral health. And that was kind of a first time a U.S. Surgeon General ever acknowledged that. And, you know, one of the things we learned during the pandemic, during the shutdown part of the pandemic in particular, is that oral disease continues to progress. And so many people, and that's probably driving a little bit of the busyness of the dental practices right now, many people had their conditions get worse, their oral health conditions get worse and worse, and they required additional care once they came back.
And, so and that's
probably a good big component of it.
And that was the irony you and I have been chatting about on prior shows and also in the office, which is while dentists were only permitted or recommended to see emergency cases, emergencies may have been created because the preventive procedures,
right,
you know, weren't being done. Now, you're a grizzled veteran. I use that with all respect and love. So you know, but I think you should explain to the listening audience that really since the 80s and 90s because of HIV, I mean, dentists and hygienists have always been in tune to the importance of infection control. And, of course, COVID is spread by droplets in the mouth and nose area, so obviously it's important. But really, since the 80s, dentists have been in tune to this. So going the next step with personal protection equipment and all these processes was really another chapter in a book that there were already sort of 11 chapters in. Why don't you explain that for the audience?
Well, that's right. I mean, dentists have already always been at the leading edge of infection control in an ambulatory care setting, which is a setting like a dental office or a doctor's office versus a hospital where people are kept in-house. It's more where they're coming and going out of the office. Would be an ambulatory healthcare setting, and they've always been the leaders in infection control in those kinds of settings. And as I've told you before, I was actually practicing before HIV was discovered and then practiced for many years after. And so I was one of the people that had to adapt to all the new infection controls. It was called universal precautions. We assumed everybody was HIV positive, and we took precautions universally on every patient. And it was quite a disruption at the time. It felt like quite a disruption. The truth is that within a couple of days, we were all used to it. And like, I didn't think I could do dentistry with gloves on until after about 3 days. I couldn't imagine that I used to do dentistry without gloves on. So that's the kind of thing that you adapt very quickly to. But we've always been on the leading edge of that. And I think it's really important. And I've been kind of expressing this, that the reason that the dentistry got shut down for all but urgent and emergency care was not because it wasn't safe. It was really to preserve PPE for the people at the front lines in the hospitals trying to treat people with the virus and keep them alive. It was not because there was a concern that dentists were going to transmit the disease, because everybody knows that dentists are at the forefront of infection control. It was really more to preserve the shortage of PPE for hospital frontline workers.
I mean, that's a great point. Even here at Northeast Delta Dental, we had actually a few years ago actually had done some pandemic training as part of our enterprise risk management, and we had acquired a multitude of surgical masks, but Dartmouth Hitchcock said that they were short, and the point that you were just making, we actually, you know, gave up all of our surgical masks to Dartmouth Hitchcock. Since then, you know, we have them, and as Joe knows, but I just want to make sure the listening audience knows, we also, through help through one of our clients and partners, SoClean, we ended up acquiring about 115,000 KN95 masks, which we distributed to our dental offices. This was during between the March 16th and May 11th period, so we were distributing some of Joe's colleagues in his department. The professional relations literally would deliver the masks to the dentist's home because they weren't, you know, in their office. So PPE was definitely an issue, or not an issue, but a challenge. Do you think now is the status? I know Dr. Joe has been really good helping us. He listens to a weekly webinar put on by the Health Policy Institute, which is a think tank of the American Dental Association. And it seems like every week PPE is getting better, but there's still, you know, challenges. You know, sometimes gowns are mentioned. Gloves are mentioned. So what's kind of your take now? Here we are a few months after the height of the egg hitting the fan. What's your kind of sense on personal protection equipment?
Yeah, most of what they talk about at the Health Policy Institute is national in scope, and so there's obviously significant regional differences. But it's exactly what you described. It's spotty. There are areas where, for the most part, most dentists have an adequate supply, and they're usually talking about a 14-day supply as adequate. And but in some places, certain types of PPE are not as available, and people are scrambling. And I've got to tell you that it was such a huge community service that we did at Northeast Delta Dental with the acquisition of masks and gowns and the distribution of them, because I'm pretty confident that there would be a lot of dentists that would still would have been shut down and not available to patients for quite a bit longer, maybe even still.
We were
a huge community service.
Well, thank you. And, of course, Joe allowed me to borrow some of his employees. Leanne Haney literally would deliver like to 15 dentists in like a half day. And it wasn't just to their office. It could be to their home. And again, I want to thank my board of directors for, allocating the funds to acquire it, and also connected me with a partner that had access to the mask, because that's another issue. Even if a dentist is happy to pay for, in this case we gave them out for free, but even when dentists are happily willing to pay for PPE, it may not be available. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio, this weekend of October 10th and 11th, where did first the summer went, and where did September go? And here we are. Pretty soon we'll be talking about the winter. And, of course, now, Dr. Joe, we sound like our grandparents. And, of course, we have great appreciation for that because both of us are grandparents. So we now know why our grandparents talked about their grandchildren, the weather, and who died. I never could figure that out. Now I understand, because both Joe's grandchildren live locally in Concord, and one of my grandchildren actually lives with us, so we have a great time with them, both Joe and his family and my family. While we're on the topic, and then this is a little bit of a segue, and then we'll get back to the pandemic and personal protection equipment, but what's the science now? So moms and dads and grandparents listening to this show, when should you bring a baby to the dental office?
Well, significantly younger than most people do, and significantly younger than most people think. It should be really by 1 year old, or the moment they start to have teeth erupt. It's probably not going to be a visit like you as an adult would experience, but it would be at least getting the teeth looked at, look at the alignment of them, maybe some oral hygiene instruction. So with a little child like that, you may not be able to use a toothbrush. You may not be able to use different types of toothpaste. But what we usually recommend is, even if you just use a face cloth and use that wet to wipe off the teeth to get the plaque off of them, that's good enough typically. But it also gives the dentist an opportunity to take a look at the teeth as they're erupting, make sure there aren't any enamel defects or different genetic things that can happen. And so 1 year old is when we say. And I will tell you that when I practice, I used to tell parents, bring them in when they're 3 or 4, which is the wrong advice, but we didn't know better at the time. Now we know better.
And so Delta Dental has we have a program called Baby by One, meaning get the baby into the dentist, by one, if not earlier, a tooth erupts. And you're correct. I think even when I was raising my kids, I thought it was like 3 or 4. And certainly my mom and dad, my father and mother, were really attentive to oral health, way back in the 60s. But I know in talking to my mother, I mean, she thought it was, 4. And, of course, science improved. So there's our PSA. There's our public service announcement for new moms and dad, baby to the dentist by one. So let's get back to personal protection equipment. So one of the things that I knew that dentists and hygienists, just for the reasons that you discussed, they always were in tune and very fastidious, correctly so, about infection control. So I was really confident that dental offices could do what they needed to do, including, by the way, the other process changes. For example, no one's waiting in the waiting room, really. Or if you are, there's only like two people in there socially distanced. You know, no magazines. Some offices, you're waiting in your car, and then they text you to come in, and they take your temperature, and so on and so forth. So I knew that all of those processes could be designed first and then followed, and then, of course, the infection control. But I wasn't 100% sure that patients would flock back to their dentist. As Joe knows, even in the best of times pre-COVID, there's a certain percentage of the population, let's say in white collar, it might be 10 to 20%, and then in blue collar industries, we know from our own statistics, maybe 20 to even 40% of people don't go to the dentist, even when the employer or a union is paying for the dental. So there's a certain amount of fear, there's a certain amount of not wanting to go to the dentist, there's a certain amount of, in the maybe the younger crowd, they don't have any caries or cavities, so I don't need to go to the dentist. There's a certain amount of that. So I thought that that might be exacerbated, you know, during the pandemic, because people know how COVID is transmitted, and they might be even more concerned. But based on our numbers, our July and August have really been the equivalent of July and August of 2019. And some of that may be, as you mentioned and alluded to, that, you know, in March and April and May, they may have missed, you know, a visit. So some of that may be pent-up demand. But I've actually been pleased with the level of confidence that patients have demonstrated. And I know I think we are probably higher than the national curve. But based on your Health Policy Institute webinars, the comeback, I'm not saying it's as big as a setback, but I've been surprised with the level of confidence, although there is still a certain percentage of people that are still taking a wait-and-see attitude. So when you're listening to national statistics, what's your kind of sense on that?
Well, one of the things that the think tank that you mentioned did was they did some consumer research to understand consumers' attitudes. And what they found was that well over 50% of consumers were ready to go back to the dentist as a top priority the minute that the dental offices were opened back up. And there's about 9 or 10% that are really would like to see either a vaccine or a real definitive treatment for COVID, so that if you do get sick, that, you know, you're highly likely to recover. And then there's another 10 or 15% that really just want to be reassured that it's safe. But fully, it's like 75% of the people are ready to go back and or have gone back. That's the other important thing to note in this most recent stuff that they published, which was from the week of August 24th. They noted that millions of patients have safely visited their dentist in the past few months just since the pandemic, and they've visited them for a full range of dental services. So it's highly safe, and people want to go get their care taken care of.
And and I've been twice since the comeback. One was for a quote-unquote regular cleaning, and then one was for a crown, actually. And I've just found the experience, I almost feel like safer than ever, more efficient than ever, because it's not the waiting around in the waiting room. Everything is clean, so pristine, and the dentist and hygienist and the assistants all have the appropriate PPE, which leads me to this question. So trying to engender, you know, trust and confidence in the dentist, I know that in speaking to some veteran dentists like yourself, and obviously the dentist looking in the eye and smiling, of course, when you're all masked and gowned up, that type of you can still do the eye contact. So how does the dentist in kind of this world where you're sort of masked up and the dentist might be almost looking like a spaceman, and you come in and you think, oh my God, is this safe? I mean, what are some of the techniques that a dentist might employ to make sure
dentists have been pretty innovative. It's pretty interesting to, you know, so they've innovated with teledentistry type of solutions where they visit with the patient for aftercare. So after they've done something significant on the patient, the follow-up care might be through teledentistry. The other thing I saw that I thought was extremely cool was a mask, a respirator type mask that had in the center of it, so that you could see the patient or the doctor's smile, it had like a clear acrylic see-through area. And I thought that was really kind of cool. I didn't test to see, you know, how protective they are and all that kind of stuff, but I just thought there's types of innovations that people are doing to personalize the care for people and to address the fact that we've become socially distanced and we do want human contact. And so they've addressed it in a number of different ways. The teledentistry for the follow-up care is a really unique way to do that, so that you can actually have a face-to-face conversation separated by, you know, the airwaves.
Exactly. And for a while, to encourage teledentistry, those types of visits, obviously you're not going to get a filling or a cleaning over a computer screen, but a lot of orthodontists were using teledentistry, and a number of our dentists were using it in that interim period, and we actually, you know, did some additional compensation to kind of encourage that. But, yeah, I saw, getting back to the mask, I saw that, and, of course, we also know that you can kind of, people can see your smile through the mask, and we actually, one of our sort of campaigns is, you know, the fact that even though that we have to be socially distanced and we have to limit contact, that you can still see people's, you know, smiles.
Sure, you can smile with your eyes.
With your eyes, exactly. So, well, great. So let's fast forward a little bit. Let's say there is a vaccine. People are, as you pointed out, and important to note that millions of people have safely visited their dentists in the past few months all across the country, even in those areas of the country where for a while there may have been a COVID spike, and with the continuation of adherence to personal protection equipment and processes, oral health can still be delivered and will continue to be delivered safely. We get past that. What do you see 10 years from now? I mean, you've been around the block a lot. I mean, as you pointed out, you started practicing, you know, without rubber gloves, and here you are, and some things have stayed the same in dentistry, some things have changed. What do you see as one or two things that might change, including maybe the, you know, better integration with physicians?
Well, I think that there's a lot of demonstration projects going on around the country doing just that, integrating care with physicians, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, dentists, dietitians, a whole variety of people. And the other thing that we're starting to see is that we're getting included as dentists. The dental profession is getting included in circles of care surrounding patients with specific conditions, like diabetes, for example. You know, dental care and managing someone's periodontal disease is critical to a diabetic, because the enemy of the diabetic is infection and inflammation, and the most common infection or inflammation in the human, in the adult population in the United States, is periodontal disease, gum disease. So it's really important to manage this stuff in different ways. And so people are looking at different ways to care for patients by creating these care circles around them. So
it's
we're going to see a lot of.
It's exciting, and I encourage the listening audience to read a book called Teeth by Mary Otto. We've talked about that book in the past, but that discusses how sort of why the mouth was separated from the body in terms of dental schools and med schools, and why we've got to get back together. And I think Joe would agree, Dr. Joe here would agree, that much better communication now between, you know, dentists and pediatricians and so forth. And a lot of the work that Joe will be doing for Northeast Delta Dental is going to be dealing with that, as well as dealing with disparities in oral health, depending on, you know, geographies and the population. So, Dr. Joe, thank you for being part of a great team here at Northeast Delta Dental. You're a big part of it, and thank you for staying in Concord. And we'll catch you again, and hopefully when we talk again, there'll be a vaccine, and we'll be talking about some other new exciting things.
That'd be great.
Awesome. So my big thanks to Dr. Joe Arante, Vice President of Provider Networks and Clinical Strategies, and prior to that, the CEO of Previsor, which powers Health Rural Wellness.